Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey guys, welcome back to Paul to the Wall. I am your host, Mike Paul, joined of course by my good buddy Tyler, and I'm very pleased to be here with the great Monica Perez of Propaganda Report. So Monica, how are you today?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm great. I'm excited. We connected through Freedom Fest, and I'm getting excited to be a host of a stage there, but I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, is this your first time working with Freedom Fest?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm not, it's funny that I should have a podcast and before that I had a radio show, because I'm not a public speaker. It's not my, I don't feel comfortable in it, but no one can ever tell. So I think I'm going to pull it off. They always told me fake it till you make it. I'm like, I'm just going to keep faking it.
You're doing a damn good job at it. So
thank you. Yeah. No, from the very beginning, the first time I was thrown onto the radio, I was terrified. And my boss was like, oh, really? I couldn't even hear it. And it was just an exact duplicate of a feeling I had when my father tried to teach me how to ride a motorcycle. And I was just fucking terrified. And I managed to wrap it up, got off the bike safely almost. But I remember thinking, like, the whole time I was on the bike, just like the whole time I was on the radio that first time, and it was an analogy my program director used. It's like being on a motorcycle. Just look at your gauges, but pay attention. Keep the throttle steady. I was like, it's like being on a motorcycle.
I have a tell, like, when I'm super nervous, if I'm like speaking in front of people, like my face will get all red. I can feel myself sweating. And then you get that like extra anxious because everyone's staring at you. So I
don't have that. That's the beauty of it. Like, that's why if I had that, then I never would have made it in radio, because literally I had a radio show on WSB in Atlanta for 8.5 years. And I literally got physically ill before every single show, not like throwing up, but like my stomach. And I would just, and I liked doing the show. And I realized after all those years of having this exam series, it wasn't that I was worried about, I wasn't anxious about the show. I just was anxious to have the show start. Once it started, I was totally fine. So I think it's just that anticipation. It's just too much for me. I can't handle
it. Sure, I get that.
Yeah, I guess Freedom Fest is a good place to start. So what exactly will your role be? What day will you be speaking? What kind of topics?
Well, that's why I was surprised people wanted to talk to me. And I'm a guest on a lot of podcasts, like libertarian podcasts, because I do have thoughts. But at Freedom Fest, I will be a host. So they have two stages. They have the big stage, which is like Tom Woods and all those guys there. And then they have a second stage, which I actually think is staggered. So I think everyone can go to everything. And I'm very excited because the first person I introduce, so I just am introducing people, welcoming, hosting like that, MC type stuff, which is new for me. And but my first guest is Maj Touré, who's the Black Guns Matter guy. Yeah. And I saw him first on Monopoly on Violence, a documentary that I liked, and I think I like chipped in for a little bit, and I just loved it. I really wanted to talk to him. So I'm hoping to do the same thing, like get an interview with him, because I'll be on the stage with him at Freedom Fest. But I just will introduce people.
Very cool. Yeah, we'll be there on Media Row.
Yeah, like anything that I'm not talking about, I'm going to be attending. And I really like the one thing that I'm very excited about is to the extent that people who listen to me, because I moved from Atlanta to LA, and in Atlanta, I have a lot of people and we would do meetups and stuff, but really it's hard for me to meet up with people. So to the extent that I have listeners who are there at Freedom Fest, I think I'm going to have a lot of time, and I love cocktails. So
that's my plan.
Yeah. There's so many good speakers. I'm excited to see. The lineup is just amazing. So we're hoping to meet some people. But like I said, we're going to have a booth on Media Row, so we'll get to meet some other podcasters and some of the speakers. So we're really looking forward to it.
So are you going to live broadcast from there? Like, what's the story?
We can. I think we're probably going to consolidate a bunch of interviews, whatever we can get, and then release them, the following week. Because I'm not expecting to get an hour with each person, The people are probably stopping by, and maybe we can do an episode of a couple 15-minute different interviews with different people. But it's our first time there, so I don't really know how it's going to go, but it'll be fun no matter what. So,
yes, agreed.
I've never been to South Dakota even, so I'm just excited about that.
My dad was a truck driver, so I remember going through there, going through the Badlands, and then even as a little kid, he took us all to, there were 9 of us, so maybe it wasn't all of us, but I remember going to Mount Rushmore. So I've been to some of those things, but I would certainly like to experience it as an adult. But I'm also thinking it would be fun to get on Media Row also and be able to talk to some of those people. Wow. But I haven't been there either. So, I mean, not like I don't always have the hall pass to go to festivals because I have, stay at home mom, whatever. So I'm not really that versed in it. I think I would be too nervous to like set up a media thing and try to interview people. And granted, Tom Woods walks by, it's just like, "Hey, man, can I talk to you for a minute?" Like, I don't know.
I guarantee I'm going to be sweating bullets the first day. That's just, it's inevitable. I'll be sweating, stuttering a little bit.
Pushing to the roots of your hair, no doubt.
Well, it's an interesting group of people, because for the most part, if you're like a just a random person who doesn't pay attention to our world, they probably wouldn't know many of these people. They may have heard of Dave Rubin. I know Dennis Quaid's there. Everyone knows him. But for like,
Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
I want to see Randy Quaid. He's the one on my list of people I want to interview.
That'd be great. Mm-hmm. But to us, it's like these people have a big sense of celebrity, you know, like when you see a Tom Woods or a Dave Smith, they're those type guys. So it's pretty cool for our little bubble of the Liberty world.
It's going to be cool. I think so, too.
So I did want to pick your brain on a few things. So you're in California. What are your thoughts on this recall election? Because I believe it's happening later this year, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, hey, here's Nick.
Maybe.
Okay. So for the recall, I don't know. I mean, people don't like him. I actually made my first friend out here. It was the craziest story. I saw someone walking in my neighborhood with an impeached Gavin Newsom shirt on a while ago. And I talked about it on my podcast. And I calculated the odds. It's like 1,000,000 to 1 odds. But the next day she tweeted me like, did you move to California? Because I was walking around this neighborhood in California. You know, do you live in this neighborhood? So that chick actually heard me and now I'm friends with her. But so she was way ahead of that. And people are disgruntled. There are people like you'll see placards and stuff like that. But Newsom is such an old family. They're like 6 ruling families of California. Apparently he's got some like tangential relationship, some kind of remote family relationship with Nancy Pelosi or Nancy Pelosi's husband. His father was the financial advisor or manager for Getty. I think John Paul Getty or maybe Gordon Getty, but one of the younger ones. So like old, or like a very entrenched money and connections. And there's like fishy stuff going on out here. I don't know if you've ever heard about like these couple of incidents. One was Jeffrey Allen Lash and another one was more recent, I think in like Bel Air, where they found mansions or houses full of guns, full of guns.
I heard about that.
And one of them was in a mansion owned by Gordon Getty's ex-wife. And I'm like, it's just 2 degrees from Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
So if he were to go, I would think it would be part of a plan. And if he wants to stay governor, I think he gets to stay governor. But I don't know. So it's hard for me to just be like, what's the, zeitgeist around here? Because I think that is quite manipulated.
We're in Illinois, so Chicago runs our entire state. So you're preaching to the choir.
And it's like that. No question. I mean, there's no question.
And it's very similar with Pritzker. Like his family owns the state. I mean, they own the Hyatt hotel chain. He was born a billionaire.
Yeah.
And, power goes to power. And it was interesting when he was running because I had all these people with Trump derangement syndrome just saying he's a billionaire, he needs to pay his fair share, all this. Then they vote for Pritzker. I'm like, this guy was born a billionaire.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he's never not been a billionaire. At least Trump made his billions, but they're like, yeah, but at least he'll legalize weed if I vote for him. I'm like, okay, you guys have no principles. Like,
yeah. It's funny because if you look at, say, the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset stuff, right? So they're totally controlling the world, build back better. I feel like Biden's just gotten too lazy because I can find entire like phrases and passages of stuff that comes out of his mouth that's like out of a World Economic Forum white paper.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tell people about the Great Reset in the beginning, I would tell them and they would be like shocked and horrified. And I guess it's gotten to the partisan level so that if they're Democrats, they're not shocked and horrified, that only Republicans are shocked and horrified. I'm neither Republican nor Democrat, but I can see those patterns. And I'm just like mystified that people who say they don't like capitalism are taking their marching orders for world control by the guy who runs Salesforce, for example. Like he's a big shot in the World Economic Forum, or like that people, even the most like neutral reading of the whole vaccine thing, even if you're just not in any kind of rabbit hole, it is clearly big pharma in control of the media and the government to force people to take something that the government will pay big pharma to give you if only they can get you to take it. So if you hated capitalism, are you afraid of billionaires or whatever, like the vaccine should be the one thing that you're like, hey, could this be a money grab? It could be.
Right.
Yet it's the people who are so who jawbone about, like, we need a little more socialism around here. It's like, okay, this is, it's fascism that you're getting, not socialism, and it is bad. I agree with you, but you don't get to pick and choose based on what you're told. Just look at who's doing what. And, you know, don't call bad billionaire bad doesn't work if your guy's a billionaire too.
Right.
Yeah. It's COVID had a way of turning the Occupy Wall Street people into free lance, unpaid evangelicals for big pharma. It's
Nazis. I mean, it's really crazy because I really have this fantasy of if I ever get to have a conversation with somebody, one of the more militant types, and out here there are a lot and they're in positions of power, that I would like to ask them to define Nazi without reference to anti-Semitism, or, you know, like just take that thing out of it and we can bring it back in later. But first, let's define what a Nazi is. And I would defy them to make a definition that could not include what's happening with the vaccine propaganda right now.
And I think too, there's, the media has really misconstrued what Nazism is, or fascism even, because if you like, Hayek lays it out in The Road to Serfdom pretty well, where he's like, it's exactly the same as socialism. It's not a right-wing ideology. It's just a nationalistic version of socialism, where communism was a global, they wanted a global revolution, where Nazism and fascism was just in that particular country.
I mean, it's in the name, national socialism.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah.
I mean, if I'm out having drinks with like friends and stuff, if I discussed it with them, you would get a totally, I mean, outside of Mike and Nick, because they're, you know, we're on the same page. But like, if you just talk to people when you're out and about, they'll have a totally incorrect understanding of what that ideology is. I mean,
right.
You know, and I thought Hayek laid it out perfectly in a very clear cut, easy to understand way.
I'll have to refresh my memory. I believe my father gave me Road to Serfdom when I was a kid. Like, that's how long it's been since I've looked at it. But it does well to refresh our memories on those things, because those guys have laid it all out so simply, so clearly. But yeah, I mean, I guess you could see it as, I mean, primarily it's an economic proposal, right? And I actually would say China, which started as communist, is fascist and always kind of had to be fascist, unless they were truly thinking of an international workers unite, you know, workers of the world unite kind of thing. That's really, I guess the difference would also be that the fascism element of it has cooperation between the state and the corporation, to where, and this is something that I think is important, is that you look at the with the fascism, or what we have like public-private partnerships, you can push a lot of excess profit. And I mean excess profit, because in a free market, you have no excess profit. You have the profit that clears the marginal cost of labor at that skill level, the marginal cost of capital, or you have entrants that bring it down to like whatever they call it, economic zero profit, something like that. But you have excess profit when the government controls some of those things and prevents competition, all that. So when you have the fascist state, when you have the corporations who are allowed to siphon that off for private gain, and then they get to live in mansions and you can't really, then you have to question whether it's more efficient to have public-private partnerships or whatever. But with the socialist model, the communist model, those guys had to hide it. So it was like the mobs in Little Italy. Like, you would go walk down the street and there would be really poor rundown houses on Christopher Street. But if you went inside, they'd have like gold leaf on the ceiling and stuff, because they couldn't show that they were raking in the dough.
Right.
And I feel like maybe that puts a deterrent on it. Like, I feel like it doesn't matter at this point, these ideologies, this idea of us, like some people in power are still fighting for free markets. It's insignificant. I feel like we're in a post-ideology world, and the ideology that we are going to live no matter what is this like soft backdoor fascism, where they don't even pass laws anymore. They just use the power of these corporate, like artificial oligopolies, to create requirements like the vaccine requirement, which could never be a law. But if you get rid of all the mom and pops and Target's the only store, and they tell you, and they make that's like a, you know, it's almost like a reverse fascism where the corporations themselves are making the laws.
Right. It's like a privatized tyranny, but it, you could argue it's even private at that point, because once they they've weaponized the state to eliminate their competition, you're basically just another arm of the government.
And the control of capital, like if they, that's why I can't call myself an anarcho-capitalist anymore, because capital has been so corrupted through fiat money and the way they dole out these subsidized loans and control the interest rate. So at one point, I believe that the treasury or whatever was buying bonds, like for corporate bonds last year, corporate bonds. So they were actually lowering the cost of capital for, even if they did it uniformly with every single corporate bond in the market, you're lowering the cost of capital for bigger guys who are out there in the public market. And I think similarly on those like stimmy checks for businesses, you had to have a banking relationship with a loan officer at a bank in order to get some of the benefits that was out there for small businesses. So they were just like de facto giving the benefit to people who were bigger and use the commercial debt market, stuff like that, as opposed to the little guy who didn't have that. And you can, that already makes it not a free market, that it's like already, you know, what would you call it? Like, it's just not really a private company anymore, in my opinion. Like, it's just not like Twitter or Facebook. Like, you can't say that they're private companies when they don't have to abide by the same laws that like a grocery store would have to abide by for freedom of speech. And they use patents and stuff. They use government protection to support their platforms. Like, that's not how it works with, you know, you see these people in front of your grocery store begging or putting political stuff out, and the grocery store has a little sign that says like, we're not supporting this. They have to allow it under certain circumstances. So I feel like all this stuff gets, they're benefiting from the government, and it's only so that they can circumvent our rights, which would otherwise be
right.
You know,
right. And I know, I know Pete Quinones has been hammering that home, like the whole, because there's a whole sector of libertarians that are still on this, it's a private company, they can do what they want. But like you just said, that when the government cheese is infiltrated every industry and they use, we'll call it soft coercion, like it's not a private company. It's been totally co-opted. And, you know, that's why you have the airlines. Right now they want to stop like unruly passengers, because like so many people are like, there's no federal law that I have to wear a mask, so why am I wearing a mask? And you know, the airlines are trying to get the government to pass rules and regulations to stop these people from being quote unquote unruly. You know,
I saw a clip, I think it was maybe the CFR or something, my partner Brad Binkley, when we do the propaganda report on Rockfin, he brings these clips and they're so shocking. And one of them was that they were professors who just plug into those think tanks saying, if we have the right tax incentives, we can tell the airlines what policies to implement. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they said. It was crazy. And I would say on the, like the PPP stuff, the public-private partnership, what really boggles the mind for me with that is they'll say, okay, we have this thing that only the government can do, but the government can't do it, so we're going to outsource it. So they take, I mean, the defense industry is actually a good example of that, where I would say anything where 100% of the revenue, or maybe charter schools, 100% of the revenue comes from the government. I don't think the government has the right to coerce the money based on this theory that only they could do it. I mean, the defense industry is not a great example, because I understand the minarchist point of view where you do like you want to have joint defense, but I would also say that this nation is under much greater threat having the defense industry than we would if we didn't intentionally antagonize other countries and increase the danger to ourselves. We'd be better off with just minding our own business and not mm-hmm. not having that at all. We'd be safer.
Right. Yeah. It is amazing how, just when you look at the size and scope of like how many just people I know in my firsthand life that are involved with either big pharma or the military industrial complex, it's like there's so much incentive there for companies that are so large that I was thinking about the other day, I know so many people that work in either of those industries that would not exist, you know, in a free market.
I think that way too, that like they, it like makes me disgusted to think when I, that like, I was thinking about curly light bulbs. So George Bush signed off. They're probably not even curly anymore. I bought probably literally 1,000 Edison light bulbs before. I mean, they're probably still on the market, but I don't shop for light bulbs anymore because I just piled up on all these ones because the fluorescent things, I don't like them for a lot of reasons. But so George Bush signed off on a law that wouldn't go into effect until after he was out of office. So a lot of people don't realize that he was the one who signed off on it. And it was to basically transition us from the historical incandescent light bulbs to these new fluorescent light bulbs. And if I recall correctly, Philips, which is a foreign company anyway, was heavy into lobbying for that law. And I can just hear it. Like, I used to be an investment banker for high yield bonds, which were smaller companies, not the biggest companies. But every once in a while, I would get, be in a room with the kind of bigger company CEOs. And of course, they would speak matter of factly about how certain laws would affect their business. And they would talk matter of factly about wanting those laws to be passed. They would never say, but of course, it might not be a better world for my kids. And I feel like that is a different world from what I grew up. My father used to have a small business and he was absolutely scrupulous about morals. And you can read back at some of those like 50s type, middle level businesses where reputation and morality and stuff were really important to them and to their customers. And that's just been totally gutted. And now I see it's gotten to the point where, I mean, if Big Pharma has hijacked the force of the state, like, look at what's happening. I mean, it's terrifying. Like, it's just, It's totally dystopian.
I saw like a new level of propaganda yesterday when I was driving home. On our highways, they have like those digital billboards that hang over the highway to tell you when there's an Amber Alert or something. They change the script constantly. And the message yesterday was, don't speed, get vaccinated, arrive safely on the highway. Like, I tried to get a picture of it, but I was in such disbelief that I forgot to even get a picture.
It makes me think of like when the fighter jets get fueled in the air. Like, Hey, if you just drive exactly at the speed limit, we'll send the vax drone just over your window.
Yep.
You drive safely, get vaccinated, and arrive at your destination.
I mean, I sat there like, what? Like, how, number one, it just shows desperation. Like, they know they've hit like a critical mass of people who aren't going to do it. And they're just trying to get whatever they can, because I'm sure they have a bunch of vaccines sitting there not getting used. And,
I figured that would happen because I thought after a certain point, everyone would know someone who is vax injured and that they had to just have that push. And now they're kind of changing tacks a little bit. They're like, you can call yourself immunized if you've already had it. So then it looks like they have a whole boost in compliance. And now they're saying, oh, the Novavax is fine. And that a lot of people will take that because it's more conventional, or so we are told. Mm-hmm. So I agree. There's like a change of, it's a phase two, act two opens.
Yeah. Except a lot of employers still won't allow proof of antibodies or prior infection. And I always look at it like they don't give a shit about employee safety. It's all just so they don't get sued. It's the same,
They should get sued for making people take the vax.
Before COVID, though, there was an OSHA law about how many hours an employee could sit in a respirator because it could cause like oxygen deprivation to the brain and all this. And then they took it out of their code right during the mask mandate. It's the creepiest shit.
The mask thing. Yeah, there have been some changes, but the mask thing is alarming. I mean, you can go back and find studies and lawsuits and stuff that address the issue of efficacy and safety. And it's like 9/11. I always try to look, if I'm looking at certain types of kind of deeper history and analysis, there's a book called Dollars for Terror, which was written, I think, in 1999. So it was before 2001, when they started to demonize 9/11 truthers, before they started that cognitive infiltration. And I feel like this is a guy who's kind of anticipating a 9/11 kind of a type event. And it's not because he's some conspiranoid. It's because the writing was on the wall. He was an investigative journalist. It's before they silenced all those people. And similarly, I look for things that happened before the COVID propaganda started, like in 2015, there were documents about trying to make contagious vaccinations. And there's been plenty of that since then. Now it looks like conspiranoia, but back then they were working on it. And that was 6 years ago. And I feel like once they put that out, it's likely that it actually is happening, you know,
yeah.
Actually mm-hmm. down the road.
Well, this is where if Nick could talk right now. So Nick's actually, he's listening. He's driving right now. He just texted me. So
hi, Nick.
I don't think he was driving when he texted me, just for the record. But he's headed back home, and he's
for
like,
legal reasons.
He's taking a vaccine while he was driving.
Yes. The vaccine's on the way to him.
He's snorting the vaccine.
He's listening, so when he gets to his computer, he can hop in and pick up on the conversation.
Great. Fantastic.
But he does a great Fauci impression, so this is where he would come in and do his great Fauci. So,
oh, don't get me started on Fauci. I've heard him for so long.
Do you think that I have noticed the press, I mean – remember, they demonized everyone for the lab leak theory in March 2020 when people were presenting pretty reasonable cases that it came out of a lab and they were all crazy or they got booted off social media. And now all of a sudden they've 180'd. So do you think that Fauci is going to be the classic fall guy, the sacrificial lamb? Or did they finally realize that nobody in the public believed that nonsense about the bat or in the food market?
Well, you know, if he were a fall guy, I would think of it like Bill O'Reilly or Roger Ailes or like that, where the fall, you know, you get your payout, you know, you mm-hmm. get your golden parachute, you don't have to work anymore. So you get some bad press. Who cares? I mean, literally, I don't even understand like how it his name sounds so much like Dr. Faustus, who sold his soul to the devil. Like, I just blows my mind. But like that guy is definitely not going to care. There's a little bad press as long as he continues. He'll be feted and praised in his circles forever. He'll be considered demonized unfairly in his little world. His wife is a big shot in bioethics, and I'm sure she'll run cover for him. So I don't really think that there'll be much of consequence to him, even if he gets a lot of bad press. But I've said this before, like his role in the AZT thing was unbelievable. So my brother was an IV drug user, and he was trying to clean up, and somebody ran, had like a little baby, and they said, you should go get an AIDS test. Let's just make sure, even though that now we know that he can never have given us a little baby. But so he went to the doctor and they told him that he had tested positive for HIV. Now, this is a guy who had hepatitis, had like TB or something like that. But hepatitis, I think, is basically a 100% false positive for HIV, which makes me think that's what it is, but mm-hmm. whatever. So he was guaranteed a positive, whether he was positive with whatever is HIV or not. So he was totally healthy. They started giving him AZT, which was not according to the clinical trials. Like, it was a right to try thing. It was only for the most desperate cases. And Fauci, from what I've read, was the kind of behind the push to take AZT off the kind of class X list as a terrible toxin and give it to people who were not desperate. My brother wasn't even ill. Like, he was asymptomatic.
Right.
And then he very quickly just crashed. And he said, that medicine is making me sick. And he stopped taking it, but it was too late and he died.
Oh my God.
So, oh yeah, wow. He was, and so sorry, but he was that. 18 years older than I and it was a long time ago, and he was an IV drug user. You don't form very close relationships with people like that.
Sure.
It wasn't. And at the time, we didn't realize. We just thought, hey, man, you know, you didn't deserve this punishment, but it was a consequence for your actions. You contracted this disease doing something, you know, but he did it. Like, I actually said that to my mother recently. I was like, you know, I don't even think he had AIDS. And she's like, me neither. I just don't think so. So we would never have allowed, you know, he wouldn't even eat white bread. Like, he would just slam smack, but he didn't, he was like, did yoga and stuff. It was very weird, but
really?
He was unlikely to take something like that unless it was urged upon him by people he trusted. So having been aware of Fauci's role in that, and then seeing what happened in New York with the ventilators, like in April, there was a study, I think it's mm-hmm. from JAMA or something, where it said that people who were diagnosed with COVID, who over 65, who were put on a ventilator, had a 2% chance of survival.
It was a death sentence.
And the ones who weren't had a 74% chance. And they're like, well, we only chose the people we knew would die. And I'm like, then why put them on a ventilator? If you were that sure they were going to die, why put them through that horrible experience? Like, there has to be something wrong with that. So I felt like, I mean, if you really wanted to get devious about it, really, really cynical, you could say they had to do these things that actually increased the death rate in order to make the AIDS pandemic or the COVID pandemic real. They had to make sure people were dying. Like, that's how cynical I start thinking about these guys.
It was the same way.
Yeah. And this guy and Fauci, think about what he knows. Like, you can't really hurt him unless you kill him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you really hurt him, he's going to balance how he fights back. So I think maybe he takes a fall. Maybe he retires. Maybe he wins a lawsuit against them, you know, like that they're totally fine with because they get to have this media thing. And then there's also like a couple of things. One is that I was reading about propaganda from way back when saying like we have yet to fully exploit the Oedipus myth, the Oedipus archetype. So like we will, like I always think this about Cuomo in New York or Newsom or Fauci, like they will sacrifice a father figure. Maybe it'll be Biden and replaced by the mother, Queen Kamala. I don't know. But then I think this 2017 SPARS document, which was absolute blueprint for the media rollout of COVID. It's just shocking, out of Johns Hopkins. I guess I missed this, but people have told me it was there and I have to look for the citation, that it talks about high level people at the CDC or the World Health Organization or whatever taking the fall. And this would, you know, maybe this fits that bill, but I do not think that he will really get justice.
No, I think you're right. He'll get a book deal. He'll fall behind the curtains. And,
or get a job at Pfizer.
Yeah, to go through the revolving
right.
door.
Yes, Big Pharma. Yes.
But he does seem to get the Teflon Don treatment. Nothing sticks to him. You know, he keeps telling everyone, vaccinate everyone. I mean, now they've had all these reports of like children, like teenagers having heart attacks, basically. And they're like, oh, well, it's very rare. And then they go on and cite a number that's like, that's much higher than what I would consider very rare.
You know what's even more rare? Kids getting really sick from COVID in the first place.
Yeah. Yes.
I
say that as a father of four, I'm not going to vaccinate my children. So
my brother and I had it at the same time over the 4th of July last year. You know, he didn't even run a fever. I thought I just had a cold.
I didn't have a fever, but it didn't feel like a normal cold to me. I felt it was hard to breathe. I felt that brain fog, which was like being in a car without oxygen. It was a very unusual thing to me, which makes me want to ask you guys a question. I have different, you know, haven't really concluded what I think it is and what I think it's for. Do you guys have, which way do you lean? And then I'll tell you what I think.
Like the virus itself?
Yeah, is it a virus? I mean, I don't even believe in viral theory, so it's really hard for me to get my mind around that. Or is it a bioweapon? Is it a 5G thing? Like, what is it and why?
And I think that
I'm not sure if you know Dr.
Go ahead, Mike.
So we have some lag. We had a Dr. Knut Witkowski on our show. He's a friend of Gene Epstein's. He's an epidemiologist, 35 years. And I asked him that question, like, is it possible this is a bioweapon? And his experience, he didn't believe so, but his reasoning was that he said it'd be like pulling a grenade while you're standing in the room. Like, the people setting it off, or they're not, you know, it's just, he can't imagine anyone doing that. But then again, when you're dealing with sociopaths, it's like, I don't know, I'm open to anything, I don't have answers. But
and I'd like to answer that, because it's totally treatable.
Right.
So I was reading a book by Jim Keith, I think, if I recall correctly, and it was a book on bioweapons, which I only went to read after this. And it seemed like everything in all the examples, documented examples of the U.S. government testing bioweapons on the American population, is that they would spray it on people. So it wasn't like person to person transmission. It was like you would get blasted in the face with it and I think in this case, just injecting each individual with it. So you would actually have to be around if it is microbial or like a bioweapon like that. And in another book that he wrote about something else, about the octopus and the Danny Casolaro murder, he just wrote, or maybe it was in a different book about Danny Casolaro, but it was the Circle, I think it was called, where they talked about, showed patents from the 80s of what they called like bioweapon retroviruses that they would sell to other countries, but they would have to sell them also the antidote. So the idea that every bioweapon has an antidote would, I mean, it has to be true for that very reason. But I would say, just don't get on a ventilator as your antidote to this. If you actually know the truth about it, I think the chances of you dying are like nothing.
Right.
Especially very close to zero.
Unless you have underlying conditions, overweight, over a certain age. Yeah, it's
I said like 78% of the hospitalizations were people that were considered overweight.
Yeah.
So
yes, I've heard that too. And I was actually scared because I was pretty sick. I didn't miss a day of work. I was absolutely committed to just powering through. But I did realize, like, normally supplements, nutrition, I'm never sick for more than a day, ever, ever, ever. Mm-hmm. I was sick for 14 days. And then like, I got like gut sick for 14 days after that. And I thought by the 14th day, when I was still having trouble breathing, I thought, it just hurt. Like I could breathe, but it hurt. And I thought, man, I could see really panicking if you were old and you didn't know what to do. So then I started drinking tonic water and I immediately felt better. Now it could have been just a coincidence because it was 14 days out, but I thought this feels like low blood oxygen, and tonic water is malaria. Malaria is blood disease. So anyway, it was, who the hell knows, but I felt like it was scary and, but unnatural, and that if you knew the true, if you treat it like a respiratory disease, you're probably not going to get through it. You know, you probably won't get the right treatment, but if you treat it like a blood disease, you might. So it could just be that little piece of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My brother Nick got it, and he had he's in really good shape, and he's 26 at the time, and he got just like mild symptoms, but then lost his taste and smell for like months.
Me
and
too.
Months. Really?
Yeah. And I just started getting it back, and I got, when I was sick, it was in January.
Wow. That's what makes me question things, is like, I've never heard of anything else natural doing.
That's what I started to think. Maybe it was 5G re-resonating to a new electrical regime. I mean, that's new thought to me, a new idea to me. But then I started looking into, like, we have a positive and negative charge. We get EEGs, EKGs. Like, we are highly electrical. The Earth is in, I was reading a Russian government document just discussing casually the Earth's electrical medium and how certain experiments by the U.S. could interfere with that. So, like, this is a thing they know about, they talk about. And maybe that's the 5G thing or whatever, could be just a new electrical regime, something that we don't even know about, possibly.
I have to do some more digging into that, because that's fascinating. I haven't looked into it a whole lot. I'm pretty firmly in the lab leak theory, because I think that there's gross levels of incompetence. I mean, when you got a communist regime, it's all bureaucracy.
Let me ask you this. I would definitely not think it was incompetence, but I would think this. This is why I'm now vacillating away from the electrical resonance thing, is that I am starting to think that the real goal here is to get that spike protein in. It looks like every single person, but if you had COVID, you got the spike protein, I think. And if you get the vaccine, you get the spike protein in that like self-generating way. Whereas the Novavax one gives you the spike protein, but it doesn't help you to generate it. So I don't know how powerful that would be as something that would hurt you. But I have heard that it accumulates the most. It accumulates everywhere, but it accumulates the most in ovaries. So is it that it is a bioweapon that was developed there, not released by accident, not leaked, but used for the purpose of long-term population control? And I mean, right now, that's the camp I'm in.
I think that in 3 to 5 years, you're going to find, maybe not everyone, but I think you're going to start to see people that are having a lot of trouble having kids. And there's going to be no explanation why. We don't know what happened.
Oh, yeah. And you know what they might do? They might say it wasn't because you were vaccinated. It's because all of those unvaccinated a-holes made it so that that Delta variant broke through on your vaccine immunity. They'll never, ever, ever going to admit.
We're going to get blamed for it. 100%.
Yeah. For sure.
And you know, I saw a video, I think it was in India. This lady was, they were like holding her down and forcing the vaccine on her.
Well, they do that to, I have a son with Down syndrome. And I noticed in this, in LA, there were videos coming out of them, like going to the homes, and people don't like needles. It's a really, really good evolutionary reaction, like fear of heights. They don't like them. So all these kids with Down syndrome, adults with Down syndrome, were saying no and screaming, but a lot of them don't have their own medical rights. And
dang, yeah.
You know, you guys were talking about COVID, but I'm here. I made it. But
hi, Nick.
So hi, how's it going?
Great.
So you guys are talking about COVID and what symptoms you had. I had it in early October, and for 2 solid months, I had 0 sense of taste and smell. I could eat raw garlic. I could eat bite an onion like an apple. It was unbelievable.
No way.
Yeah. For about 2 solid months.
That's so
then
cool. You should have videotaped it was, that.
Oh, I did. I have like great clips that were on Snapchat. I have the videos, but so it was gone for 2 solid months. And then it started coming back, but then about half of all the food that I ate and drinks that I had tasted like rotten flowers or rotten fruit and fish. It was the most disgusting thing. And life was just miserable. And it wasn't until about, and then my sense of smell was gone. It's still pretty weak. And it wasn't until about a month ago that I could actually smell things a little bit, but I still can't smell shit. And I don't mean not smell anything in the colloquial sense. I mean,
cannot
smell feces.
Shit in the bathroom.
Yep. Which isn't the worst. That's actually like
kind of a superpower.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So I did know somebody who was vaccine injured. She had COVID, then got the first shot and had a terrible reaction. And one of the things is now everything she tastes and smells is metallic. Like she really can't get through that. But there was another thing that I noticed, which was that the way, and I had read this research, it was in China, but it was translated, but it was in like ResearchGate or something that said that like glassy x-ray in the lungs and that painful feeling in the lungs is a consequence of having low oxygen in your blood. It's not the opposite. So that was another reason I thought it was blood disease. And that pneumonitis, I also saw another thing that said pneumonitis is what it felt like an inflammation of the lungs, not pneumonia where you have congestion in it, but that was a side effect of radiation treatment from cancer, and it can take up to 8 weeks to develop. And this, we got sick at the end of January, and we saw all these giant, what I assume were 5G towers, giant, giant, giant cell towers go up in our neighborhood right over around Thanksgiving because we didn't want to go to the honey baked ham. It was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Did you see the antenna on a honey baked ham? Like, we were like, no ham.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving. So I think there's like weird symptoms attached to it. And I just, well, what do you think, Nick? What do you think it really is?
Well, I mean, we were talking about like COVID or the vaccine.
But like, what's the point of there's a lot of different things, the controlled destruction of the American economy, whatever, but for the actual physical thing, is it just selling vaccines? Is it getting spike proteins in everybody? Is it killing old people? And is it a virus? Is it a bioweapon? Is
it
5G? Like, what is going on? I've been thinking about it hard for a year and a half, and I keep going back and forth.
I think similar to you, I have way more questions than I have answers. I know a lot of things don't add up. If you look at the number of like flu deaths and pneumonia deaths, how it's like almost zero. And then people go, well, that's because of all the COVID measures. And it's like, wait, this is a respiratory thing. The flu is on surfaces and people are still touching things. So that doesn't really explain it.
Yeah. What is
then?
I'm wondering that too. Like nobody's been sick in my house and usually the kids get sick.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I mean, I wonder, but then, I think the vaccine is just pretty nakedly pharmaceutical companies. I'd like to see actually what their revenue is over the last year compared to like year
Pfizer
over year.
I think Pfizer was up $60 billion in 2020.
Oh my God. And I'm sure that has nothing.
Before the vaccine. Yeah.
I'm sure that has nothing to do with the giant PR campaign, but, no, I mean, I definitely have more questions than answers. I think the lab leak, or maybe it was a bioweapon, you know, unleashed by China. I'm open to that. I'm open to any compelling arguments. And to me, it's just wild. I was going to ask you, are you familiar with the Weinstein brothers, Eric and Brett Weinstein?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So did you see
Brett.
That?
I mean, I watch his thing once in a while. I saw him talking to those two guys talking about how I think that's where I got the tidbit, which I later heard other people say, who I trust, that it the spike protein accumulates in the ovaries.
Yeah, I, so you're probably talking about the video with the two biologists or immunologists, whatever they were, where they were talking about the vaccine side effects. And I couldn't believe YouTube even let it stay up. Like, I really couldn't believe
didn't
it.
Didn't he get nuked from YouTube, though?
No.
I saw on Twitter like a few days ago that they nuked his account.
Wow.
I'm like 95% sure.
Yeah,
yeah, I think he mentioned something like that.
Yeah, it's crazy because... Oh, for sure. I mean, and what's crazy is Brett Weinstein is a progressive, but I like listening to him and his brother because they're very honest, and it's like they're the best of the leftists, in my opinion.
Did you see the Evergreen College expose? The videos of how he what happened to make him catapult into, you know, his origin story
as
a public figure. Yeah, so it was really, it was like Occupy Portland, but the preview, predictive programming for like a trial run is when they occupied Evergreen College. Anyway, that's another story.
Yeah, no, I it is a very interesting story, kind of similar to like Jordan Peterson, where they feel like there's one event that kind of catapults them. But I really couldn't believe that YouTube even let this stay up, which you're saying now they took it down because it was going viral. And, you know, if you have somebody like him, who he's like very COVID conscious and everything, and he's very like, everything must be peer reviewed and, you know, certified by academia and all this kind of stuff. And if he is voicing his opinion, and it means that he really strongly believes in it, and he's very sure that there's hard evidence. So it's like this confirmation thing
of what? What is the
of the vaccine having like horrible side effects.
Right.
Talking about like with anecdotal experiences they had and then how the media is suppressing it. And, you know, he's honest enough to go, okay, there's something really bad going on here. So it's, I don't know. Yeah. I just want to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, even if you look at the trial data for Pfizer and Moderna, and I say this all the time, the last trials they did before the emergency use authorization between those two mRNA vaccines, there were 80,000 people, like 40,000 in the experimental group, 40,000 in the control group. And all of those people, only one person died of COVID anyway. So they clearly were using in their trials people who were not really vulnerable to dying from COVID. Mm-hmm. So they could say nobody in the experimental group died of COVID. So that is already fudging the numbers. Then I don't know if it was both, but I believe it was at least one, probably both, of the trials, the control group was blown up. They gave them all the vaccine, saying it was unethical to continue this experiment, which is definitely not. It wasn't unethical, but they blew it up. So now you can't have long-term trial data from that trial. And I'm sure they're going to lower their standards for the approval too. And if you look at that Alzheimer's drug that was approved recently, I think they're walking out to us this incredibly low FDA approval standard that they're going to introduce. So I think all of this is a way to cover up that the vaccine would never have been approved under a normal process that we've seen in the past. And that is enough to me, like that all the shenanigans behind how they're introducing it to us. But also, I know personally people I can name who were told by their doctors. I know three people just right off the top of my head who were told by their doctors that it was the vaccine that injured them. One was a lady who, I guess, like her thyroid kind of blew up and she immediately started experiencing dementia. She was older, but she was totally healthy. And three different doctors told her it was the vaccine, second shot.
Oh, my God.
I know somebody who got tinnitus after the first shot, and they said that's definitely the vaccine, like, yeah, hold off on the second shot. And then the other person who had permanent taste and smell loss, having gotten the shot after having had COVID. And so she said it was within a window that now they don't allow. I think now they make you wait 90 days before. I'm just saying all of those, I know these people personally and their doctors are confirming it. So like, it's almost like I could probably find enough people to write on a list that would be more than any other vaccine or drug that was allowed to stay on the market after, or vaccine anyway, after like that many known injuries, you know, that many verified injuries. I could probably make a list myself personally that would get it taken off the market in any previous era.
Have you read the research like they did on animals using the mRNA vaccine, where when they were re-exposed after like X amount of time, like all the animals got super sick or died?
Yeah, it's called, they used to call it disease enhancement. Now they call it immune enhancement. Mm-hmm. Talk about it being a switch. But that's what I worry about the Novavax too, is that conventional coronaviruses did always have that feature. This is the mRNA one. I didn't read it myself, but I heard people talk about it. But I did, before this came out, saw that that's why we never had a vaccination for the cold before, because it is a feature of even the conventional coronavirus, and that's like deadly. So you could see that in the fall come out, but again, no doubt they will blame it on unvaccinated people.
Yep.
And if it's contagious, if the vaccine has an impact on other people, which we don't know, but I've read this before. I recently heard somebody talking about it in a podcast, but I'd read it myself, that live virus vaccines are totally contagious. So you can't go around people who are immune compromised if you have just gotten like a certain kind of vaccination. So there's definitely precedent for vaccines like leaping around. That's why I feel like we're not, even if we had good data, we wouldn't really be able to distinguish between vaccinated people and unvaccinated people and their injury if unvaccinated people can be tainted by vaccinated people.
Yeah, and that's what's so creepy about the giant PR campaign, where like the NFL, I mean, every corporation, the FDA, like everybody, every politician is pushing the vaccine. And no matter how much support you get behind it, it's like, guys, this is still you're a guinea pig. Like, there's no way around that. It is what it is. Like,
there's no long-term data. They can't have long-term data.
And like you were talking about, like Monica was talking about, look at all the people that everybody knows personally that have had bad side effects. And it's like, guys, this isn't normal. This is not normal. Somebody's like, oh, I was just stuck in bed for 3 days and my arm was numb. It's like, does that sound like a healthy thing for your biology, you know, versus, you know, your immune system? If you're healthy, you can beat it.
Especially with something that they attribute a long haul COVID to. So it looks to me, people getting the vaccine are getting this illness. It's the same like that. Even those kids getting myocarditis and pericarditis. I knew a boy, 14-year-old, like 15 years ago. It was absolutely shocking. It was somebody I worked with. Her son died. And the way it was described to me at the time was that he had a cold, and it sometimes a cold can move into your heart, inflame it, and there's nothing they can do. And every once in a while, one in a million or whatever, a kid will die of this. Damn. He died of it. And I remember thinking, and they said very distinctly, it was not a flu virus. It was a cold virus. So that means it has to have been a coronavirus or a rhinovirus. So when I heard them saying this about young people getting affected by myocarditis and pericarditis, because that's what they said he had, was like inflammation of the lining also around the heart, that I said, see, that is a very, very, very rare complication of that virus even pre-existing. So every side effect I hear seems to be related to the actual bug. It's not necessarily, like, a lot of times you'll get a vaccine injury will be an autoimmune response. So you get like acute flaccid myelitis, which, by the way, is polio, called polio. You know, sometimes they call it polio, sometimes they call it Kawasaki's disease, this transverse myelitis. But the bottom line is, your immune response to the vaccine will attack the myelination, which will stop the signals from getting to your extremities from your brain. And that's why they start getting a little paralyzed on the edges as a vaccine injury. But what I'm saying is, a lot of these vaccine injuries seem to be illnesses that would be also associated with the actual, you know, COVID. And like, didn't that CEO supposedly kill himself because he got tinnitus from COVID? And then I know somebody who's vax injured by tinnitus from the vaccine, and it was told it was the vaccine. So if there is a thing as long haul COVID and people who are getting vaccinated are exposed to the symptoms of COVID, are you not potentially setting them up for long-term illness that isn't even just that 3 days where you're in bed?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that, because when everybody was started telling me about, like, people I know about their side effects from the vaccine, I go, yeah, it sounds kind of like you just got COVID. It sounds like they just
gave everybody COVID.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
People who resisted it. People who were actually strong enough to resist getting it in the first place.
Big Pharma will sell them a cure for that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, take this. For the first time ever, I just saw on TV. I mean, my kids and I just like laugh at every single solitary commercial. We watch Hulu. Every commercial is Big Pharma.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you can't buy this directly. You have to ask your doctor for it. And it's, you know, side effects include death. And my kids and I are like, why do they even advertise? You think you just keep your mouth shut and go to the doctors? I'm like, I think they do it to control the news on those channels. I don't really know. But for the first time ever, I saw an ad where a younger woman was talking to an older woman, her mom, her grandma, and the grandma said she had COVID. And she said, there are really good therapeutics available right now. So contact your doctor and he can sell you this thing that will make you better. And I was like, that's a change. Like that's a new thing.
Oh, the TV commercials though, just in general, cause I don't have like network television or cable. So we have Netflix and Amazon Prime. So I hardly see anything, but my wife and I were in a hotel last week for a wedding and we were just flipping through the channels and it was like every commercial was woke. It was like a Saturday Night Live parody of what's going on. I saw three consecutive commercials with interracial gay couples. Which, yes. Hey, I'm a libertarian. I don't care, but it's like,
yeah,
I think this is a little overrepresented of what's going on in the world, though.
It's definitely an agenda. You know, it's definitely an idea, cultural thing. Yeah. And why, right? Do they think they're going to make more money that way? The straight way, like, I don't mean straight as in not gay, but I mean, like, just the obvious one thing follows. Like, are they going to make more sales because of that? Unlikely. So they will benefit, but in some other way. And that's where I think that's like a tell that there's something going on.
Yeah. I mean, the first time I saw it, I've told the story before, but Tyler and I used to be in school to be aircraft mechanics and the school came in to do pictures for the website. And then they basically got all the white men out of the pictures. So it was like a couple females in the class, they said they wanted non-traditional students. But then I sat there and this was in 2009 or 10. And I was like, what's the end goal? Just have less white men fixing airplanes? Like what, where does this lead? Like what's the, but it's weird. It's like a cult where they just.
We mostly just watch Amazon Prime. And one of the things I think it's free is Scrubs right now. Scrubs was a great comedy. Mm-hmm. I liked Arrested Development was another great one, but Scrubs is really, really good. And it's actually quite wholesome. It's about 20 years old now. But they would make funny jokes about race. And one of the young surgeons is a black guy. And he was saying like, you know, sometimes I don't even, something to the effect of, I don't even know who my real friends are. Like sometimes I feel like you guys just like me because I'm black or something like that. And his friend JT was like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? And he shows like the school yearbook. And it has like pictures of people playing. And he's like, I'm in every picture. And he's like, well, that's because you were popular. He said twice. So there would be like him playing catch with himself. Like they would have him like Photoshop throughout the background. And I was just like, that's a funny joke. Like he recognized that this is just, you know, it's a little over the top. Their virtue signaling is a little crazy. But yeah, they do it on purpose. Yeah. And they're obviously satisfying the agenda. What kind of agenda? An agenda that they are aware of. How are they aware of it? It's communicated to them, which means it's distilled and then communicated. That's a conspiracy.
Agreed.
Yeah. No. And what's very strange is just a comment. I don't want to go on a tangent, but what's crazy is how the woke thing really started escalating along with COVID. It's like they ramped it up. It's like, I can't make sense of it. You want, like we're both talking about, I wonder what the end goal of this is.
Oh, that makes me think that if you look at the World Economic Forum stuff, they were talking about the fourth industrial revolution and then it kind of morphed into the Great Reset. But what they were talking about always was that and Event 201, mm-hmm. which was October 2019, where they just lay out the novel coronavirus pandemic blueprint for 18 months, literally to the point where I called the bottom of the market on a day in March 2020. Stupidly did not have any dry powder to capitalize on it, but that's how perfect that live simulation was. But they talked about at length over and over again that the inequality in society, this deep inequality came out when people were under stress, that it bubbled to the surface and it manifested that we're incapable of dealing with big problems because of all these fractures and fissures in society that were there, but were unseen. I don't believe that at all. I feel like you just don't, when everybody's like doing what they want to do and eating and having jobs and stuff, it's like not like that. But what, another thing I noticed, and I didn't put it together until later, and in part, you know, now that you're mentioning it now, that as soon as the policy started coming down of COVID, what they were doing, the second they started coming down, everybody, I just moved to LA and I'd seen, you know, live in this, I rent a house, but it's like in this fancy neighborhood. And immediately these people were just went to Costco with their Escalades and filled it up to the top with everything you could imagine. Cleared out a room. Everybody had their own room. Everybody had their own laptop. The kids started homeschooling and they've been homeschooling, like schooling through school, Zooming school since then. And it's really hasn't opened up completely. And so everybody had space. They had supplies. They had everything they could possibly need. The parents all had white collar jobs so that they could immediately Zoom. Nobody was out of work. Nobody was, you know, only waitresses and stuff can't go to work, right? And I immediately said, this is the most regressive policy move I have ever seen in my life. Only poor people will suffer from this. Mm-hmm. And any struggling business, all the small businesses would go under. The big ones that had, I mean, and literally I said, like, what you do, you can go back to the 30s and see what the big guys do is they precipitate crashes like this and they wait. And they wait until all the little guys are wiped out and then they come back and and then there's two companies in any given industry and all of that is happening. And they're acting like now we have to build, this is the punchline to what you were saying. Now we have to build back better because as we see, this inequality was much worse than we thought. Look at the unrest. Look at how backwards people have gone. Look at how much harder they were hit by the pandemic, which is not true. You can look at African countries and stuff and death rates and everything. Not true. So certain ones. And anyway, so I think that it is hand in hand because they always use that as a platform for the build back better thing.
Yeah. One of the worst ones, most heartbreaking ones I saw right away during the lockdowns of a small business getting crushed was locally to me. There was a wedding venue and a great family. They've been in business for 30 years, respected and loved by everyone in the community that's done business with them. But they got shut down and they had a bunch of down payments taken for weddings already. But they had used that money to keep their business afloat, waiting for the lockdowns to end, spent everyone's down payments, went out of business. And they're on Facebook saying, like, listen, we took these down payments. We know we had to use it to keep afloat. They won't let us open back up. We want to refund our clients. You know, we're going out of business, but we want to pay back all these brides and grooms that are losing their down payments.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So she went on Facebook and tried to do like a clearance with her gift shop saying, like, order, you can come pick it up. The state police for Illinois showed up and shut down her closeout sale too. Wouldn't let her sell her gift shop out. And
wow, even she probably was totally willing to put the stuff on the sidewalk in a paper bag. I mean, it's not that hard to do that. I know someone, I don't know if I want to really tell the details, but there was a big event planned at something like that. And everything he had was invested in the supplies for this event. He had to have the event. He had to. And he did. And it was totally not allowed. And he was facing like 90 days in jail and big fines. And he was like, worth it. And he did it. And I just thought, that's what you do. He had a lot of kids. And he was like, I'm just doing it. I don't care. Like, I have to do it. I thought he was being like a big shot. Like, that guy is speaking truth to power. He's like, no, this food is going to rot. If people will come, they're eating this food and they're paying me for it. And I mean, I'm circling the drain. So this is my last guy. I don't care if I go to jail, you know?
For sure.
Yeah. Well, and that's what was heartbreaking to me as somebody who loves freedom is that we didn't see more of that. That, like, you see that the overwhelming majority of the population will just go along to get
that's
along.
That's what the STEMI checks were for. They said, you know, and they would say, if you keep your labor employed and pay them, we will forgive these loans later, which to me is like totally dangerous anyway. But that took a lot of that forward momentum out of it. And then you can see people had like malaise and they kept pushing out like the extended unemployment benefits and just so many things that just took that unity out. And of course, as soon as you close the bars and the gyms and the churches, it's really hard for people to communicate. And then all you get is the screens, which are lying to you about people's attitudes.
They moved immediately to crush any sense of community where dissent could build. It's a classic play.
I know.
It's a tale as old as time. And I also don't think it's any coincidence that to further crush any dissent and the people that refuse to just go along to get along, I don't think it's any coincidence at all that you see the increased talk of domestic terror. Mm-hmm. So what they're going to do is anyone that was like, these mask mandates were bullshit, you know, I don't buy into what's going on. Now they can be like, well, you're on a no fly list now. How's that? I mean,
right. I mean, I do think that there is going to be an element of self-identification. Like, I don't know what's in store for the unvaxxed people, but they can't possibly be decimating the followers and leaving the independent thinkers as the only people who can breed. Like, there has to be
right
something going on there. And I don't even know how to speculate that.
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. It's like they're kind of like we're talking about what one of the baseball teams that had like the vax and unvax seating. And Tyler was like, dude, the unvax seating is going to be lit. It's going to be a bunch of like minded people drinking beers, no masks.
Yeah,
it's going to be great. I was thinking that you could like they have an honor system, you know, at the gym or something. I don't know. And you could like I see people going and not wearing their masks. And I think I keep waiting for this Churchill thing, like for people to go like this, you know, like V for victory, V for vaccine. Vaccine is victory. You know? This is the war. This is the peace. And I keep expecting people, you know, they're really smiley because they don't have masks on. And I'm like, you're vaxxed. But then I think, you know, I just take my mask for a while. There, I was just taking my mask off. And then I thought, you know what? I think I might stand shoulder to shoulder with my unvaccinated sisters. And, you know, fuck those motherfuckers. I'm going to, yeah. You know, plus well, there's a thing called fake masks.
Nick, you owe Monica a Fauci impression when you were missing. I said you.
Boy, I heard that. I heard I was listening live. I was coming home and I heard Monica just raking me over the coals about the AZT thing, which people will not get off my ass. It's, you got people like Monica Perez and Dr. Rand Paul and Jim Jordan and all these guys, and they just won't get off my ass. You know, let me be a rock star. I'm a born rock star, baby.
That is fantastic. I mean, that is really spot on. Normally people overdo the New York kind of Italian mobster. Of course, he overdoes it himself.
but what's crazier is Nick's Rand Paul is even better than his Fauci. So that's a whole different.
Really? I spoke to Rand Paul once.
Rand Paul. Yeah, well, we actually did a video where I played the part of Dr. Rand Paul and Dr. Anthony Fauci and even Jordan Peterson. And I only started doing the impression not too long ago, but
you're a real talent. So, what's your background? How do you get to be like this? A lot of free time, or are you a professional?
just growing up. I don't know. Growing up, I could always just like kind of do impressions. And
are you a musician? I always feel like someone has an ear for that kind of thing. I can only do my mother. Are you kidding? You do great impressions. Yeah.
That made me laugh out loud when I heard you doing your mom's impression. That was funny.
But what's so funny about it is that she can't hear it. She doesn't think, really? You know what I mean? Funny. She can't hear it, you know?
It's just her baseline.
It's like you can't smell your own farts. She can't hear it.
Yeah.
So I also wanted to say that I'm loving the Triple G poster behind you.
Oh, the People's Choice, People's Champ. I was at the fight that he got robbed. It was Mexican Independence Day.
Against Canelo, the first fight?
Canelo Alvarez, yeah.
He won that fight. 100%.
Triple G, of course, yeah. Totally. To the point where the place was full of Canelo fans on Mexican Independence Day, mm-hmm. Okay? The tie, which was blamed on a chick because chicks are stupid, the tie was so outrageous that the entire place erupted in boos. Mm-hmm. So people who were rooting for Canelo were disgusted that they threw the fight for Canelo. And then when I knew that Max Kellerman was totally full of shit, because later someone said, oh, you don't understand. A tweet of mine was saying, like, if you were watching on TV the whole time, Kellerman's like, oh, you know, it looks like Triple G won that round, but, you know, Canelo had some technical whatever. I mean, he was sucking wind the whole time. Yep. So I thought Triple G was pulling his punches. Like, I actually thought they said to Triple G ahead of time, because it looked like he could have cremated him. They might have said to him ahead of time, hey, man, like, you know how it works. You can't just crush the pretty boy. Like, you can't, like, hurt him.
He's the cash cow.
Yeah, Canelo, you need to just, like, keep his face intact. Like, you'll win. You can clearly win without actually drawing first blood. And, boy, I thought Triple G was pretty classy after that. I used to have a drop on the radio show, like, big drama show. We got big drama show. And then the second one, I mean, Triple G lost his will to live, but whatever.
I thought, because I watched it live. I bought the pay-per-view, and I was drinking beer with some friends, so I was like, all right, maybe I just saw it a little differently. So I rewatched it again like a week later.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, Triple G definitely took like 7 rounds of that fight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was 7 or 8. The whole time. Yeah, the whole time. Just, I mean, I know it doesn't really work this way, but the general impression the entire time. Yeah, I only thought 2 or 3 rounds, could you say, Canelo got.
Yeah.
I thought. But anyway, it was really disgusting. It really bummed me out. And then I kind of lost my boxing thing. That my brother, who I was telling you about, he was in the Golden Gloves and fought in Madison Square Garden. So even as a little kid, he was 18 years older than I was, but even as a little kid, I would go. And one time he was on a ticket with Tony Iadanza, later Tony Danza.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
I think I saw Tony Danza. I'm really too young to really remember it. I remember being like, you know, it's be smelly and stuff, but I don't really remember like watching the fight. I was like 7.
So one other thing I wanted to ask you about, you sent me a picture of a Le Mans Blue 68 Corvette convertible.
Yes.
So please
Isn't
explain.
Isn't that gorgeous? Yes. So
gorgeous.
So as a kid, I used to walk. So I have 8 older brothers and sisters. So like they were adults basically when I came around, and I used to walk to the mall with my sister. And there would always be, it was so long ago that like they didn't even have fire lanes. You could park right in front of the mall. And there was always this royal, I used to call it Royal Blue Stingray. Now, this was in the 70s, so probably it definitely wasn't the one that I have, but it looked like, you know, real big front fenders and stuff. And I said, oh, someday I'm going to have that exact car. And I remember my sister saying, when you're old enough to afford that car, you are not going to want it. Like, it's cheesy. Like, you're just not, that is not going to be the car you want. And I, my husband knew that story, and I'm not a fan of like blue cars, but it's Le Mans blue, and it really is a beautiful color for that car. And, so that was just a long time ago. And he was like, yeah, that's a really nice car. And then it was a couple of years ago. I was like, you know, I don't like these smart cars. I think we need guns, gold, and a getaway. Like, we should have something with a carb. Like, we have to have something, you know, you just have to have something that you can get away and you fix yourself. You know, my dad was always like, I couldn't fix cars anymore after you had to like buy a thing to plug it into and it would tell you what was wrong with it. I was like, that was it. I was like, I need something before that. So, you know, I would say to my husband, like, we need a car with a carb. We need a car with a carb. And then that shows up. It's a 68. It was like matching numbers and everything. Really beautiful. Oh, nice. 40,000 miles on it. And it's like 50 years old. Is 68 Stingray.
327 car? Is it the motor in it?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Cool. And yes, he had actually had a crack in the block. He spun a bearing, and when they went to rebuild the engine, they found a crack in the block. So we have the matching numbers for, you know, it's like freezing Walt Disney's head in case they ever, like, we're saving the block in case there's ever a way to repair that like hairline fracture.
Oh yeah.
But I think it's called, I don't know if it's called a Stingray, if 68 was the first year of the Stingray, or 69 when they called it the Stingray, but it has like the egg crate vents, not like the slatted vents. Mm-hmm. And so he shows up with this, and I'm like, yes, it's lovely, I love it, like, you're now a museum curator, like, take good care of it. Then he spins a bearing, but that's okay. And but it never, we have 3 kids and 2 golden retrievers, like, I don't know who is going with him when he goes into town in a 2-seater convertible vet. Like, ah, I'm out of here. You were right. It's great to have a getaway, honey. You know,
good luck.
I think one of the dogs is going to get that seat.
Yeah. Sounds like you took advantage of your getaway.
Yeah, my love of the, yeah, so I did, and it's really a beautiful car. As soon as it got off the bed and got in front of the house, he was like, take it for the first spin. I said, I guarantee you it's going to stall and I'm going to flood it, so you are gonna, he's just like, what do you mean? I'm like, ah. So in this generation, we don't even know how to drive cars like that, and they're slow, and they don't, you know, it's not slow, but like, it doesn't, like, you need more room to brake. And I realized, like, taking it on the highway and all that, that people don't understand. Like, and when I was, my father was real old school, taught me how to drive. Like, he would say, like, on a hill, you have to park, you know, you have to stop on a hill, like, pretty far behind somebody, because if they have a stick shift, it might roll back a little bit. Like, I was always tuned into all that. But nobody sees it. So I'm in LA trying to drive down the highway and people, like, right on your ass, like, I need a little space here to stop, and you can't pressure me like that. And so it's a little nerve wracking, but it's quite beautiful. It's like a thing of beauty.
Yeah. I love that era. That's actually where our background is in. Nick and I grew up where our dad did muscle car restorations since my earliest memories. So,
my son who has Down syndrome named that car Muscle Man.
Oh, nice.
I said it should be a female. But
very cool.
And it's Muscle Man.
I like the fact that it's a convertible, too. Nick and I got a really gay convertible story, if you want to hear it really quick.
Yeah, lay it on.
So I used to have a 70 Pontiac GTO convertible that I had in my wedding. Cardinal red, real nice. It was older paint and everything, but it looked really nice.
Original paint job?
It was one-time paint, but it was done in like the early 80s.
Yeah, us too. Yeah.
So I used it at my wedding. Then, obviously, didn't bring it home that night because I got a ride home. And the next day we're cleaning up the venue, and Nick and I are bringing all the stuff back, taking truckloads of all our equipment. And lastly, we grab my GTO and drive it home, and we hop in it together, drive it about 30 miles back to my house. And, you know, it's a nice car. I get a lot of thumbs up. I get people that, you know, give me thumbs ups every time I drove it. And we got an exceptional amount of thumbs ups. People were just like applauding us, passing us thumbs ups. I'm like, maybe there's a car show going on. Maybe there's a power tour. We get all the way to my driveway and realize we left the Just Married sign. And that's
what year
my
was this? 5 years
this
ago?
Was, 3 years ago. Right. So, and that's my really gay car story.
Wow, that is really gay. That is pretty cool. And that people loved it. That's so funny.
They're like, hey, I know gay dudes were in the muscle cars.
Funny, yeah, you know? It's just funny.
Oh, we had a good laugh. Gosh.
Oh, I love that.
You know, Monica, I was already a fan coming into this interview, but now knowing that you're a fan of combat sports and classic cars, I'm just that much more of a fan.
Yeah. So. You didn't even ask me about barbecue.
I know. That's next, next time. Right? Yeah. But Nick, you got some closing questions, I believe.
Yes. Okay. So we're a little over time, but it's been a lot of fun. So Monica, we recently started doing this. We have rapid fire questions to end the podcast. And then I'll ask one serious question too, but we'll get through the rapid fires.
Okay.
So I will pull these up. Okay. What scenario is more likely? COVID came about naturally from wet markets, or we landed on the moon in 1969?
Jeez, that's I would put zero possibility on both of those things. Can I go with that? I would actually say it is more likely that the wet market thing, because I just think there's just absolutely no chance that we landed on the moon.
Was that the Red Hot Chili Peppers said space may be the final frontier, but it was made in a Hollywood basement?
Absolutely, yes, no question about it.
I'm completely with you there. Yeah. So, okay, second question. The FBI arrests you for domestic terrorism because of your libertarian background. What song do they play on repeat to get you to talk?
Oh my gosh. What song? I don't know, but I don't know what it's called, but I was in an Uber recently when I was in Austin, and this guy, I didn't know if he was trying to torture me or if he like just liked it, but it was a song that literally was just like MF or the N word, like the entire time at full blast. Like, I don't even know if it's a song, but I think I would have to put an end to that by any means necessary. I can't.
Sounds like a real real white supremacist, huh?
Yeah. Well, of course, like it was a rap guy and it was a black guy singing, or really wouldn't have happened. But I just remember thinking, like, this has got to, it's almost like intentionally meant to agitate you. So I don't know.
Absolutely. Okay. Who would win in a fight between Anthony Fauci and Ann Coulter?
Oh, Ann Coulter for sure. Yeah.
That's what I thought too.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, if you could egg one politician's house, who would it be?
Gosh, I should have had more coffee. who do I hate the most in the world when it comes to being a politician? Oh, gosh. Oh, I'm sorry. I have to think this through. I mean, the easy answer would be Gavin Newsom, because he's ruining our lives. But, and it would really cause some enmity if I said it was Trump. But I feel like, I don't think Orange Man bad. I think that, oh, baby. I think that if it weren't for Trump, you know, if Hillary had been in office, they never would have gotten away with this.
Wow. That's very interesting, actually. So yeah. That might be a whole other segue. But okay, we got a couple more. Okay, so over the last year, we've gotten to know a lot of America's governors. Who do you think is the most handsome or charming governor?
Well, who is that smoke show chick? Who do they call Christy the smoke show?
Christy Noem.
Is that it?
South Maybe. Dakota.
South Dakota.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think I'm going to run into her. But it would have to be a guy who's the cutest governor. Newsom's pretty cute, but I think he's gay. So can you, is he not? I don't know. My mother always says that. I bet Kimberly Guilfoyle was married to that mayor of San Francisco, but he was gay. So I guess they broke up. I think that's the governor of California. And I said to my husband, oh yeah, he's gay. And he's like, he's married and has kids and stuff.
That's a cover just so we can get off.
I don't know. So I think he is pretty handsome, but he still makes my skin crawl. Can you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think whether or not he's homosexual is a separate question, but he's definitely gay. So
yes, that's, yeah. Okay. South Park rules.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Okay, would you rather have access to all of the classified information on 9/11, aliens, the JFK assassination, or Jeffrey Epstein?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't care about aliens. I think the JFK assassination.
I might have to lean that way too.
That's the answer.
Mm-hmm.
That was when it happened. That's when the regime changed. That was the great permanent coup. Mm-hmm. We've never recovered from that. So whoever really did that is in the driver's seat, I think.
Yeah, that's a good answer. So that was all the rapid fire. So the one serious question I had is, I'm a fan of your show, and you guys, like every day you're doing research into some really like serious, like dark, cynical current events and a lot of this behind the scenes stuff. And somehow, and it's like Nietzsche said, if you stare into the abyss long enough, the abyss stares back into you. But it seems like with your show, you always seem to have like a very positive disposition and you maintain a good mood. What do you attribute that to, or how do you keep that positivity, like just that outlook?
I have to tell you, it is not really natural to me, like it is now because I learned how to do it, but it was 100% my mother. 100% when I got this, I fell into this radio thing, had nothing. I was a banker. I wanted to be a banker, or I had been a banker. I wanted to be a banker again. And I just got this gig, weirdly, long story. But since the very beginning, my mother, who was a big talk radio listener, and I wasn't, she was like, it just doesn't. I'm not listening to it. If it's down, it can't be down. It has to be up. It has to be up, but there's no reason. And I would say, but mom, I'm reading the news. Like, there is no way. Then don't do it. There's no point in your doing this if you can't keep it upbeat. I just don't want to keep it positive. I'm like, mom, you can't have it positive. I don't care. I don't care. So it took me years to like just even get my mind around how that was possible. And I think I found like a place where that was I think it's finding humor in the absurdity of it was how I had to do it. And recognizing, feeling hopeful about the power of mockery to disempower the other guy. So if you really make fun of Fauci, if you really hit him where it hurts by just mocking his ridiculousness and not laughing at the, and not laughing at the stuff that, that he might think is cute, you know, no, he's not cute, but really laughing at him, I think it would unnerve him. And I think that by pointing out stuff that's laughable about these people disempowers them in the minds, because the real danger here is it's all about the fear. Like, the fear is what's controlling everyone. And you wouldn't really be afraid of them if you thought that they weren't so powerful. And if you can laugh at them and laugh at what's weak about them, I think that that's where you get the power. So we try, but it is hard to stay upbeat, and I have to like keep moving my focus. I have to get like more spiritual or more internal or whatever. And I always fall back on the St. Peter's test, not because I'm just living for the next life, but because I think that's where the power is here. The St. Peter's test for me, what I coined that, is when St. Peter asks you, like, what did you do down there? And you're, and like his rapid fire questions are going to include, did you ever vote for evil? And you'd be like, no, I voted for the lesser of two evils. Like, it's a yes, no question. You know, he's like, so I think that you have to live like that, because it gets you out of the framing they want to impose on you. And it frees you from the fear of what might happen on this planet. And that is the power we need to disempower them. So I just always try to think of, this is the game. This is that you're being scouted as a player, not as a team. So just play your best. If your team loses, it doesn't matter, because the scout doesn't want like a dirty cheater. He wants the guy who's going to go all the way. So that's how I try to look at it.
That was even a better answer than I anticipated. That's I think it's a really good mindset to keep, honestly. That's
because that's what I have to think that every day, because it is hard. It's a lot of work. I've got kids, and I'm always having like kind of moral question of where do I put, am I, you know, I really do it for my kids, in that I want to do, I'm going to my grave saying I did everything I could to the best of my ability, which, like the parable of the talents, like you have to do what you can do. I can't do what I can't do. And hopefully this is valuable, but I have to always think like, am I better off making bone broth more often, you know, and not like just trying to nourish my kids in a way that they're going to be healthy personally, or learn how to grow chickens or something. Like, I have to always have to ask myself that question. And so that's why I have an answer.
Perfect. Nice.
Yeah, I heard the last half of that question, or that answer. Like I heard, my wife's sleeping and both my babies are waking up, and I'm trying to.
Oh, as a matter of fact, for the second time in a row, my son with Down syndrome texted me, I'm going for a walk. I was like, and my husband's not home. So, snap back. I'm not trying to get out. I want to hear what you have to say, but like, wow, you're right. I should be way more worried than I am.
That's a great place to end. So, well, Monica, I can't wait to get to Freedom Fest. Hopefully, we'll run into you there.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure I'll have lots of free time. So,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, right, yeah.
Awesome. And thanks, guys. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. If you want to give any of your plugs, or people can find you, your show, your social media.
Sure. If you're interested in my show, it's The Propaganda Report. I do it with my co-host, Brad Binkley, and it's a daily show, news of the day from a perspective of truth, liberty, and justice. That's on any podcasting platform you listen to. You can find it in The Propaganda Report. And if you want more content, commercial free, we do cocktail parties, live stream, stuff like that. Go to patreon.com/propagandareport. We do amazing deep dive videos on rockfin.com/propagandareport. And just to chat with me, I'm on Twitter every day at Monica Perez Show.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. And guys, please head over to iTunes and rate and review the show. And find us on Twitter at Pauls to the Walls with a Z. And come out to Freedom Fest July 21st through 24th. Thanks.
Hey,
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.